War devours Europe's youth while intellectuals watch in horror. What drives men to fight? This question consumed Bertrand Russell as he penned Why Men Fight amid the carnage of 1915. His answer challenges our fundamental understanding of human nature. We fight not primarily from reason, but from impulse. The book became an intellectual sensation, offering a revolutionary vision of society built not on possessive impulses that lead to war, but on creative impulses that foster life. While the British establishment branded him a pariah for his pacifism, his ideas spread like wildfire through lecture halls filled with those seeking answers to civilization's apparent self-destruction. What if our institutions, built on authority, competition, and fear, are systematically destroying the very impulses that make peace possible? We like to think of ourselves as rational beings, but impulse, not conscious purpose, fundamentally shapes our lives. Look at children. They run and shout not to achieve goals, but from sheer impulse. Adults simply develop elaborate justifications for actions driven by these same primal forces. This insight transforms our understanding of conflict. If war springs from impulse rather than reason, then rational arguments for peace will never suffice. Only passion can control passion. Modern growth confronts institutions rooted in authority, from Oriental despots to kings and patriarchs. Medieval institutions, though restrictive, remained stable because authority was genuinely respected. This system ultimately failed when it couldn't meet demands for justice and liberty. History shows a recurring pattern. Individualism leads to conflict and potential reintegration. Religious freedom emerged when Luther challenged church authority. Nationalism followed similarly. Oppressed groups claim moral high ground, but once liberated, often suppress minorities within their borders. Germany illustrates this. Its weak national identity in the early 18th century, forged under Napoleon's oppression, later transformed into aggressive expansion. War's opponents aren't detached intellectuals, but individuals driven by powerful life-affirming impulses, artistic and scientific passion, love, and creativity. Yet social conditions weaken these forces. Our institutions, built on authority and injustice, require compliance rather than open minds, while our economic system compels most to serve others' goals instead of their own. The state embodies collective force through internal law enforcement and external warfare. While civilized states follow rules when using force against citizens, they exercise unlimited force against foreigners, constrained only by fear of internal rebellion or military defeat. The state's authority extends to taxation, marriage laws, punishment of dissent, and military conscription. Consider how artists and musicians from enemy nations must kill each other rather than declare neutrality. An act that would benefit humanity, but would result in their execution by their own countries. The state maintains control not just through laws, but by shaping public opinion, creating a tyrannical sentiment that threatens liberty as much as oppressive legislation. Patriotism evolves from simple love of home and shared culture into a quasi-religious force. Citizens willingly sacrifice lives in war, surrender wealth through taxes, and subordinate personal interests to national goals. During crises, individuals merge their identity with the nation's, finding purpose in collective struggle, explaining why rational arguments fail against patriotic fervor's primal appeal. In civilized nations, war emerges from two sources: a small group of bellicose individuals, typically educated men following international affairs, and the war fever that eventually grips the broader population, leaving only a tiny minority opposed. Pre-World War I illustrates this psychology. Its leaders, intensely patriotic, pursued national interests with complete disregard for other nations. They viewed national welfare competitively, measuring Germany's success against other countries rather than its intrinsic prosperity. They envied French culture and British liberty, knowing war would destroy these qualities even without defeat. War fever combines irrational impulses with calculated thinking. Influential figures seek to exercise power, overcome resistance, and gain respect. Common citizens find in national conflict an outlet for repressed primitive passions. The impulses driving war, imagination, adventure, conflict, solidarity, are vital to dynamic societies. The challenge lies in preserving these forces without destructive outcomes. Educational systems carefully cultivate patriotic sentiment. Schools curate historical narratives, emphasizing triumphs while minimizing failures. Children learn creation myths about their country's founding and heroic tales of national figures. This systematic indoctrination creates an almost universal conviction of national superiority, enabling citizens to endure tremendous hardships in service of the state. Yet patriotism's religious character contains inherent flaws. Unlike universal religions promoting worldwide brotherhood, patriotic devotion remains strictly bounded by national borders. The more intensely patriotic a population becomes, the more likely they are to dehumanize those outside their national group. This creates a zero-sum game where one nation's triumph requires another suffering. Modern forces increasingly challenge traditional patriotic sentiment. Global communication fosters cosmopolitan perspectives. Individualism grows stronger as education levels rise, encouraging people to question accidents of birth determining national loyalty. Meanwhile, anti-capitalist movements expose how state structures often protect wealthy interests rather than serving the general population. Money worship reflects inner defeat and diminished life. While artists and lovers pursue self-created desires, money worshippers seek passive, external happiness. This belief that money measures all value has drained life of joy and vitality. Industrial systems should meet four criteria: maximum production, fair distribution, decent conditions for workers, and room for vitality and progress. Capitalism prioritizes production, socialism emphasizes distribution and worker welfare, but both may stifle the crucial fourth element, human vitality. Our fixation on increasing production has become irrational, neglecting vital human concerns. Cities foster deterioration while depleting resources. Our distribution system, based on changeable laws, lacks justification. Private land ownership stems solely from historical conquest, where the powerful subjugated others into serfdom or tenancy. The power of vital thought is immense. Religious toleration, democracy, socialism, and women's rights all began with isolated thinkers before transforming society. Two principles should guide us: promoting individual and community growth, and ensuring one's advancement doesn't come at another's expense. Human impulses divide into creative, like the artists, and possessive, like property ownership. The best life maximizes creation and minimizes possession. Strong possessiveness becomes hostile to creativity. The state and property embody this possessiveness, opposing life and leading to war. Life devoted only to itself remains animal. To be fully human, life must serve something beyond existence: truth, beauty, or what Spinoza calls the intellectual love of God. This spirit illuminates our path, letting us create meaning even amid cruelty. When Rome fell, St. Augustine wrote City of God, replacing material ruin with spiritual hope that sustained humanity through dark centuries. We too must create new hope and build through thought a better world. Bad times demand more of us. Only supreme fire of thought and spirit can save future generations from destruction. Will you join in this creation or remain caught in its opposite?